Okay, I'd like to call us to order. Welcome, everyone. This afternoon's objective, this is theology and popular culture. This afternoon's objective is to look at things like, we're going to look at symbols, brands, logos, a brief exercise. It's, I think you'll find, kind of illuminating. We'll talk about what religious symbols are from a theological point of view. And then we'll look at some ads and how advertising taps into a lot of different kinds of things like salvation narratives, ideas about spiritual formation. Advertisers, whether they're doing it consciously or not, are really adept. They're better than most pastors, most Christian educators at understanding how it is to get inside of a human mind and shape it according to its own desires. That's what I hope to achieve this afternoon. But I want to start with a quiz. Now, I assume some of you were here yesterday, so I'm going to be referring back to a couple of things from yesterday evening, but you don't have to come to all these sessions to appreciate what's going on in each new session. But let's go through a little quiz. Now, I'm going to show you a series of images, and I want you to shout out whoever can identify it before I unveil it. I want you to shout out what the image is. Okay, this is a hard one. Anybody want to venture a guess?
Celtic cross.
Who said Unk? Oh, you get an A+.
Well, a bunch of us.
I heard about three people say Unk. The Unk, the Egyptian symbol of life, the key that opens the realm of the dead. Certainly, if you were an ancient Egyptian, you would have recognized it instantly, even though it was concealed. Okay, how about this one?
HP.
Okay, quite a few more of you got this one. It's the Hewlett-Packard logo. All right. Okay, I heard Greek.
Greek art.
Okay, so far so good. Zeus, the high god.
Yes.
All right, good at this. Another Greek god.
Second life.
Up here. Good guess, but not there. Yes, who said that?
Up here.
The eye in the hand. It's a Jewish symbol. If you're Jewish, you know this. I mean, this is a common symbol. This is not quite as common as the cross in Christianity, but certainly a common symbol. The symbol for divine protection, the eye and the hand.
Yes.
All right, another eye. How about this?
Jesus.
Stigmata, I heard it.
Stigmata.
Not Jesus, however.
Stigmata
of St. Francis. Now, Catholics generally recognize a palm with a spot in it is a stigmata, is a reference to, of course, the puncture wounds within in the hands of Jesus at the crucifixion.
Coca-Cola.
Yeah, okay. They're a lot quicker on these brand logos. What?
Audi.
Audi.
Toyota.
Jesus. You're getting them.
Boy Scouts.
Trinity, close enough. Technically, it's the Triquetta, which is a Celtic symbol for the Trinity.
Peugeot.
All right. Let's drive one. Okay, this is the first one where there were more voices on the religious symbol than on the brand logo. Very good.
The cup?
The cup. This is the disciples of Christ. This is their trademark symbol for the chalice. Quicker on this than on the chalice. Two beverages. Good, very good.
Kellogg's.
All right. Good. Yes.
Who are the cars that are?
Saint
Peter.
Saint Mark.
Saint John.
Who said Saint John?
Saint John.
Excellent. How did you know?
I recognize it from a window in my church.
Very good. Saint John. All four of the gospel writers have traditionally been symbolized. Saint Matthew as the man, Saint Mark as the lion, Saint Luke as the calf, and Saint John as the eagle. These images on the top row are from the Book of Kells in Ireland.
Fish.
Good, you got it. The fish, ichthus, Greek for the Christ.
Starbucks.
Very good, you got it.
Cairo.
Cairo, wow. Well done.
First.
Yeah.
It's that thing that talks about Jesus. It's the first three letters of Jesus in Greek.
Who is your Sunday school teacher?
My dad.
Is he here?
Yeah, he's here.
He's down here.
Man.
In the back room.
We're both pastors.
Stephen.
Good work. I mean, I have seminary students who don't get this one. Even after I reveal it, they don't get it. But that's exactly right. The first three letters of the name of Jesus in Greek, Greek monogram, which is an early symbol for Jesus. We found this. This has been found in the catacombs in Rome. One of the great representations of it, the high altar at the Gesù Chapel. This is the Jesuits' big church in Rome, high above the high altar. It's not in his service, which many people assume in English, because it's so frequently identified with the Jesuits. But it is the first three letters of Jesus' name in Greek. Tough one.
Mackle skin leopard.
Rose window.
Grapes.
Okay, who said grapes? Well done.
Oh.
How about this fruit?
Apple. Oh, yeah.
All right, well done.
Best company in the world.
Okay, we didn't keep score, but you got a pretty good idea just by the volume in the room how much more familiar we are in general, even among a group of Christians, with the symbols of corporate America than we are with the symbols of our own tradition. And I was pulling out symbols. Most of them were Christian symbols, and most of them have deep roots in the tradition. We should have some kind of facility with the visual symbols of our tradition. We certainly have all kinds of, much more than you realize, facility with the visual symbols of our culture. Okay, and what's ahead? I want you to think of these two fragments of verses. First from Philippians, put on the mind of Christ. And second, from Ephesians, put on the full armor of God. Now, get this image here. Put on the mind of Christ, or insert the mind of Christ into your own mind. Conform your mind to the mind of Christ. What we can ascertain, what Paul has helped us to ascertain, what the gospel writers have helped us to ascertain about the mind of Christ. Conform your own mind to that. This is what we're called to do as Christians. Put on the full armor of God. Paul calls us to do this. To protect ourselves in various ways, to be identifiable to others as being associated with God. Well, this is what commercial advertising is all about. Either conforming our minds to a particular worldview which has a single product at its center, or surrounding ourselves, putting on a cloak that has certain powers. The armor of God, only it's not God's armor that we're putting on. Keep those images in mind in all the advertising that's ahead of us in the next 40 minutes or so. Okay, now this is an allusion to yesterday. I never have enough time in class, but to kind of wind things up from yesterday, because you're going to see some, I'm going to show you some commercials where this will be relevant. So if you weren't here yesterday, you're getting it very quickly, the dime store version of what the class was about yesterday. Behind experiences of the sublime. Picture it this way. Here each of us is. We are knowing subjects. We are persons with minds, with senses, with consciousness. There's something out there. Let's call it the numinous. Let's call it the sacred. Let's call it the holy. Let's call it God. It's out there. It's not made of the same stuff we are. It is a mystery. We never see it the way we can see physical, material objects. We never see it the way we can see each other. We never see it even the way we can look at ourselves in the interior of our consciousness. It's ultimately an ungraspable mystery. And that's not only God. There is just this underlying mystery, subliminal, below the threshold. I'm talking about sacramentalism, right? There is a mystery behind all reality. Now, we as knowing subjects have certain equipment we work with to experience anything. We have the data of our senses, our sight, our hearing, our taste, our capacity to feel. We have these senses through which we can absorb what's going on around us. Add to that, we have the hardwiring of our brains. We have certain ways of conceiving of reality. Think about this outside of the class. But we cannot conceive of anything that is not located in the nexus of cause and effect. We can't conceive of anything that has not been caused and does not cause other things, does not have effects. That's part of the hardwiring of our brain. We can't conceive of anything that exists outside of time. We can talk about it, we can pretend to imagine about it, but we really can't. We can't get our minds around something that does not exist within the sequence of time. These are. Who knows to what extent these accurately represent reality? As Christians, we can trust that they do, because God has made our minds, the same God who made the world around us. Nevertheless, imagine if we had 7 or 8 senses, how much more experience, full our experience might be. And thirdly, we have a cultural worldview. This is what distinguishes us. I mean, for the most part, these are universal, cross cultures. Every human being has 5 or 6 senses. Every human being has basically the same hardwiring. I know that's debatable in some circles. I don't think it is myself. Cultural worldview is culturally contingent. And our religious traditions are part of that cultural worldview that shapes us, so that we, whatever kind of experience we can have, it is going to be filtered through a screen that is composed of these three elements. And how it is we're going to see that mystery, the noumena, the sacred, the holy. So that experience itself is not something we completely manufacture within our own minds. That's called solipsism. Nor is experience an unedited take on the numinous that's really out there. Experience is always constructed by both. The mystery that's really out there and this, these elements of this grid of our minds. So that when we see a chair, we recognize it, we can come to an agreement with each other, yet nevertheless, behind the chair, there is this underlying mystery. A horse, a tree. Now what the exercise yesterday was to look at through the 18th, 19th, and 20th centuries, how our American predecessors began to see much more clearly or claim to have experiences of the numinous within nature. And that's what I was trying to describe yesterday as an experience of the sublime. That in nature they felt they were drawing closer to this absolute mystery. Okay, now, I think we'll jump ahead and look at some commercials now. Keep that in mind, this definition of the sublime, and I'm going to show you a set of commercials where, consciously or unconsciously, these ad makers are tapping into our sense, our human sense of the sublime, and the power that that has over us.
shapes. The cars with shapes we have seen only in our dreams. The cockpits full of computers and video screens. Where are the cars that are invisible to the wind? I know where you're going, and you do.
Oops.
Where are the cars we were promised? They're closer than you think. Introducing the new Infinities. Infinity, accelerating the future.
Okay, what caught your attention in that commercial?
First cars they were showing.
Yeah, they were pretty. Yeah, it's pretty fascinating to watch.
That wall between the people and the object, that you could see it, but you couldn't quite get there to touch it.
Yeah, and they all went up to that window to see what was going on outside.
It seemed to be all animated except for the car. There was some.
Yeah, there was a lot of computer-generated stuff going on there, except for that Infinity car outside. And there's also a historical or chronological differential going on, inside and outside. They are seeing the future. You remember what I said yesterday, those of you who were here, about the experience of the sublime or the holy one is simultaneously attracted and repulsed, or one visitor to Niagara Falls described himself as feeling as if he was terrified, and yet he felt as if his shoes had been nailed to the floor. That's a sense of awe. I mean, there really was a sense of awe being emitted by these people when they saw this car. And, I mean, what's the most obvious point to make here? What's the name of the car?
Infinity.
Yeah, okay. I think the next commercial is another Infinity commercial. Infinity is especially good at tapping into the sublime.
Unleashes power in a way that feels virtually endless. The all-new Infiniti G, 306 horsepower, beyond a machine. The Intel chip. For years, it's been trapped inside PCs, inside dull little boxes, dutifully performing dull little tasks. What it could have been doing, so much more. Today, the Intel chip will be set free and get to live life inside a Mac. Imagine the possibilities.
Woo! Okay, reactions to that one.
Just
yeah.
And Dennis, I'm going to ask you maybe to comment too. The music for both was very seductive.
And the voice.
Like, being as a musician, especially the repetitive one in the first one, and the sort of off meter, I mean, it sort of sucks you in. The second one, the same thing happened to me.
Interesting. I never.
And that was more powerful than any image.
Yeah.
It really accentuated the image.
For me, the image, I mean, I really, the image was just a power. It's like there's power in these things, and I can feel that. I mean, power. Here's this. Oh, that's powerful.
Both the car and the Intel chip.
What I found interesting with the second Infinity commercial was that it was out of the abyss, out of the waters of chaos that the car came and drives off.
Yeah, this is Genesis 1.
Yeah.
I saw sort of like this cleansing, it was like clean look to it, and then like with the people in suits, it was like kind of the same feeling where it's like all perfect and just kind of.
Yeah, you've got, I mean, in most religious traditions, you've got to purify yourself before you can come into the presence of the holy.
Clearly beyond the ordinary, yeah. It's way beyond the ordinary. I couldn't really be a part of either of those.
In terms of the song that you said, the Intel one, the name of that song in the Intel commercial is by an artist called Moby, and the song title
Moby,
is God
right.
Walking Over the Water.
Oh, what a good catch. Yeah. Yeah. Moby's a very thoughtful musician. But he's in commercial. I mean, he's everywhere in commercials.
I thought it was interesting, going back to that first one, being a child of the 50s, I remember watching, you know, the potential we had for interesting automobiles. But I looked at the Infiniti, I said, it doesn't look too much different from my car I'm driving right now, so what's the
yeah.
thing?
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't really exciting, it was just kind of, it was aerodynamic, but you know, it looks like any other little car just driving on the road right now. So I thought, that's kind of a disappointment. I mean, it's all the hype, and then that's what you get.
Yeah.
All that imagination.
Yeah. Well, they got to persuade us.
Yeah, they got working hard on us.
Yeah.
In the name of...
I remember seeing the Apple commercial on YouTube, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And I, knowing Apple's history, that's actually a really effective commercial. So
for what reason?
Because nowadays, more people are switching over to Macs because of that commercial, basically. Because of that announcement.
Because they've got Intel inside.
Yeah.
Yeah. Living inside.
Right.
I mean, that was the final line of the commercial.
There's that meaningful stare between the two people.
Yes.
Yeah.
That
yeah, exactly.
Like
a little procreative stare there.
Another
yeah.
thing I thought was interesting. Another thing is that all three of those seem to be saying that, you know, not only is this mysterious power, but it's available to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
This is a way to connect with, and it will make you special.
Yeah, here's the product. Lay your hands on it.
Uh-huh.
And you will acquire its powers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Put on the full armor of Apple. Okay, this next commercial is for Pontiac, another car commercial. Car commercials are just rich with this
yeah.
kind of these religious dimensions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now this commercial, this one's coming up. Think back, those of you who were here yesterday evening, about what happened in the 19th century, about how the natural sublime has to give way to the technological sublime, and that's the storyline behind this next 27 seconds.
Wind howls because it can't keep up.
Again, there, if works of art can inspire in us a sense of the sublime, which Kant and Burke both felt, you know, now here's a car that is itself a work of art. One more commercial along these lines. This one, again, think in terms of Genesis, sort of going back to the beginning of time, creation ex nihilo, creation out of nothingness, sort of the pure, pristine perfection of origins.
And finishes on the RX to make sure it's absolutely flawless. Visit your Lexus dealer today for an exclusive look at how nothing else is built like a Lexus RX.
Okay, Now, let's look at a different theme.
Quick question.
Yeah, go ahead while I'm doing this.
Can you comment? There just was an amazing lack of human beings in all of those.
Yeah.
I mean, in the photos, the cars too, there's only, you know, a hand. Or,
except for the Apple one.
Yeah, but they were suited, and they were covered.
They were covered,
but all the car commercials, they just...
Yeah, that's an interesting, fascinating observation, really. I mean, this is where I'm working towards on Thursday. I think in information and communications technology is where we have loaded up many, many of our traditional assumptions and expectations about the divine. And you've just pinpointed that in that short set of commercials. Okay, next I want to look at a short series. This first one, I've muted the sound. So watch it, 30 seconds. I'm going to stop it and I'm going to have you tell me what the dialogue was. Okay, before you hear the sound, what was the sound? That could have been pantomime. It didn't need any sound.
Light on calories, Campbell's light.
Light on calories.
You have real food instead of air.
Real food instead of air. That's great. Yeah. Now, what did we see at the very beginning?
White.
Smelling like colorless.
Sterile. It's all white, sterile.
Do they use expressionless in the ad?
No,
oh, okay.
I don't think so.
Expressionless.
Oh, it's honest. Dieting.
Dieting, yeah.
Meaningless.
Meaningless.
Sterile.
Sterile, good.
Uniform.
Okay, very good.
Multiracial community.
Multiracial. Was it multiracial?
Yeah.
Interesting, okay.
Unsatisfying.
Unsatisfying, okay, and then what happens?
The happy guy with the suit comes in.
Colorful.
Yes.
Come to save you with Campbell's.
You
can exactly.
Have everything you want.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. Yeah. He's come to save us with the product that's being sold through the commercial. Okay. Now, here's the real dialogue.
For too long, lower sodium foods have come up empty on taste.
Hey, everybody, how are we doing? Wow. Got here just in time.
Okay, before I show you this next one, which is one of my son Henry, who's in the back row, one of his favorite commercials, I want to read you just a brief passage about how commercial advertising almost always organizes itself around a salvation narrative. Every 30-second commercial, as Walter Davis, a media scholar, explains it, portrays a mini-drama of sin and salvation, depicting evil, its source. And this is achieved in 30 seconds. You just saw it in a commercial, you're going to see it in the next commercial. Portrays a mini-drama of sin and salvation. It depicts evil, its source, who or what can save us, the happiness that follows deliverance, and what we must do to be saved. Ad writers tap into our boundless yearning for salvation and bend it into decisions, our decisions, to consume the products that they're selling, whether it's SUVs, cellular phones, shaving cream, financial planning,
diamonds, or Campbell's soup, with the expectation that in acquiring these products, we will be rewarded with goods that otherwise elude us. Not just good-tasting soup, but freedom, beauty, power, knowledge, pleasure, and even immortality. We absorb from advertising many of our most basic convictions about how to obtain salvation. Okay. Now, watch this next commercial.
Mr. Hadley, would you like a Coke?
Never had one. What else have I done?
Hello,
Doris. I will always love you. Bombs away.
Another salvation, yeah, all that happened in just 28 seconds. Another salvation narrative here.
How's it going, Frank?
How's it going, Frank?
Everything's good. Everything's great. DSL got your employees on edge. Comcast Business Class Internet, only the very best in DSL, and now with PowerBoost, for download speeds up to 12 megs, right when you need it most.
Okay, what was the salvation narrative in that one?
Kill each other.
Basically, there was the guy that was... that was getting frustrated with his computer, basically his internet. Then he
it's
took
too
it out
slow.
On other people, and they took it out on everybody else, and it kind of escalated. And then they just brought in the DSL, or the Comcast.
Yeah.
Slow internet is the source of all grumpiness in the office.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the
first
story.
First evil will triumph.
Yeah. So you want a peaceful kingdom in your office? Get high speed DSL. Okay.
Can I say something?
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to go back to the soup one for a minute. Because the word that jumped out at me was remember. I remember soup. And these were all middle-aged people. These are all the people that the church is trying to say, why did you leave, you baby boomers? And all of a sudden I saw it's the promise of abundant life. It's saying, you thought you were alive, but now I'm going to give you the taste of something that quickens a memory that you've abandoned. And I could just imagine this guy looking up and saying, I remember church. That there really had been an empty bowl in his life. And
yeah.
Life came back. So the word remember and the fact that there were no children in that tells me that I'm the target here of this and what the church might do with that.
Yeah. Yeah, and
we could rewrite, yeah, kids rewrite that commercial, yeah. With the, instead of the Campbell's soup person coming in, somebody coming in, maybe a Jesus figure with the bread and wine, put that out.
Yeah, that's really true.
Juxtaposition to the Coke commercial where he runs into a church. Well, he wouldn't work. You got a co-commercial, and one of the things he's missed is, I haven't been to church.
There you go. I heard it there.
Well, we may or may not get to it, but when you watch television commercials, whenever you see a commercial for a beverage, pay attention. And ask yourself, make this strange connection between what that beverage is promising and the variety of things that we've learned over the course of our lives that the sacrament of the Lord's Supper promises. And, again, whether it's conscious or unconscious, these advertisers, here's a liquid, soup is a liquid, and look what it promised. It's a sacrament. Okay. Let's move to another theme, sin. Let me show you a few on sin. And here, what to look for here is, for the most part, These are not, these next commercials are not exactly salvation narratives. These are telling you to give a longer leash to temptation, to your desires, that it's okay. Shoulder whispering into our ears. That series says, listen to the one on the left shoulder. And this last one, Jesus, 40 days in the wilderness, Faust, I mean, tapping into this deep narrative tradition in the West about what the devil can promise us.
What happens if you did not grow up with that narrative? You know, we have a whole society now that doesn't know the narrative. Would they get that?
This is where they're getting it from.
Yeah.
I mean, commercials for many, anymore, are the deepest level of mythology that they're going to deal with for the rest of their lives. I mean, that's something that the church needs to worry about.
Oh no!
And movies.
And movies.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, don't get me on to this. No. I mean, but Disney, every movie that Disney's made in the last 30 years has been trust yourself. Don't listen to any authorities outside of yourself. Trust your feelings. And as wonderful as those movies are, and as much as my children enjoy them, I have reservations about that message. Okay, since we're running short on time, let me skip ahead, because I love this next series. I call it religious affiliation, but... let me preface it with I'm reading a couple more paragraphs from my book. Again, back to those references. Put on the mind of Christ. Put on the full armor of God. When you watch car commercials, let me read this passage, and then I'll say a little something about it.
The naming of automobiles has a fascinating history. In the earliest era, when both the automobile and advertising industries were young and still feeling their way, cars bore generic names like Model T Ford, Cadillac Model 30, the Chevrolet Series 490. In the 1950s, cars began acquiring names from the animal kingdom, like Mustang, Impala, Bobcat, Cougar, Thunderbird, Roadrunner, Eagle, Falcon, Stingray, Barracuda, Pinto, Bronco, and Ram. You ever wonder what happened to all those cars? As our ancestors might have adorned themselves with the skin of totem animals, believing that the unique powers of the animal could in so doing become one's own. You put the hide of a bear on your back and you become powerful like a bear. You put the hide of a cougar on your back and you become fast like a cougar. The totem animal. The practice was revived in the naming of automobiles, tapping into these primal energies and fuzzy mythologies of totemic animals. In the 1960s and 1970s, there was some flirting with names from the gods of the of classical mythology. Cars were named Apollo, Centaur, Electra, and Cressida, names of Greek and Roman gods. Now, recognizing that the culture has gained some distance from both totemic creatures and from Greek and Roman deities, automobile manufacturers have recalibrated their lexicon to a different mythic layer. Newer vehicles are called Tracker, Trooper, Expedition, Explorer, Excursion, Safari, Trailblazer, Ranger, Renegade, Quest, Odyssey, and Voyager. You pick up the theme? These vehicles invite their drivers into a legendary world of intrepid explorers, the world of our colonial and frontier ancestors, who navigated their way to uncharted and unspoiled lands where fortunes could be won and anything could happen. New mysteries discovered, hidden caches of natural resources exploited, the very things that we realize we have finally hit the limits of. We're tapping into an 18th century mythology of the great explorers and naming our automobiles and then putting them around ourselves like the full armor of God. Or the naming of women's perfumes. Similarly mystifying. I don't know if you've ever paid attention. There's two approaches at least to naming women's perfumes. One approach is to name these fragrances after archetypal essences. Things like, and these are all real names of perfumes, truth, beautiful, eternity, realities, space, happy, pure. These could be virtually read out from Plato's metaphysical ideal types. There's another approach to naming women's perfumes, and that is to give the scent a name that associates it with a primordial taboo or transgression. Names such as obsession, decadence, duende, envy, knowing, my sin, Eden, banish, Babylon, or beyond paradise. These perfume names are all powerful religious symbols, both on the positive side and the negative side, as totems, things we aspire to, and as taboos, things we've been taught to avoid, but now they are for sale in essential form. They invite us to return to a time of origins, mythical time of origins, the time either right before the fall, where innocence prevailed, so you have names like happy and pure, truth and beautiful, or to the time, still in the origins of things, right after the fall, where you get this other series of names. Nevertheless, we're returning to the point of origins where the world was still full of possibilities. Now, I think I may have a few commercials that show cars. I mean, if you watch TV at all, you have seen commercials of cars out in pristine wilderness. And the great irony there is it's the cars and the fossil fuels they're burning that are destroying that pristine wilderness.
But the advertisers want us to disconnect those two things and not see that there is actually a destructive correlation between driving cars, particularly the SUVs, that can reach those pristine wildernesses, and the deterioration of those places. Okay, it's called religious affiliation, but think in terms of the totemic skin that you put on to gain the powers of this other, of the totem.
It's not just another truck. It's a Honda Ridgeline with four-wheel drive, a rugged, integrated close-box frame, and a lockable in-bed trunk. Introducing the all-new Ridgeline. Above all, it's a Honda.
Okay, I'm going to show one more in this series, and then I'm going to jump to my Eucharistic series and show three or four from there so you get the idea. But I wanted to make this point of this series you just watched. It's totemic skins that are being put on. I call it religious affiliation because this really is what churches are in competition with. Advertisers are telling you, if this is the world you want to inhabit, buy our product. You know, if you want to be Yosemite Sam in that truck where the mud flap girl climbs in to be your passenger, you know, buy our truck. If you want a tough vehicle that could survive a King Kong flinging it through the air, buy a Ford tough truck. And
around our brand, I mean, brands are like denominations. I mean, people, every one of us, whether we're in the church or not, we have a constellation of brands that we're loyal to. And that has so much to do with our self-identity. Now, one would hope that our denominations or our local church or our theological ideas are dominant and not just another accessory along with the Ford truck or the Hummer that we drive and the Campbell soup that we drink and the Apple computer that we carry around with us. But that, I mean, advertisers are pretty busy at trying to give us meaning. That's what's going on here. They're saying, consume our product and your life will be meaningful in this particular way. You'll be saved in this particular way. And that's what the churches are up against. Okay, one more commercial in this vein, and then I'm going to show just a few on the Eucharist, and then we'll be done for the afternoon. Okay, once again, most of these are about liquids that you can buy. Pay attention to what's being promised. That if you put, now it's not clothing or armor you put on your body, this is now taking something inside. It's a power that you take inside that then vitalizes you in particular ways from the inside out. From the 70s. For those of you who don't know, this is Mean Joe Green, and his name and his reputation is relevant to the commercial.
Okay.
Thank you. about it?
Why don't we step outside and change our views? We don't see eye to eye. Sometimes it's true. The good times will come.
What did you learn from that last commercial?
You've got a gift for sale.
You can bring people together.
Yeah. I mean, what is a communion table all about?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Here's a beverage that will bring sworn enemies together, make them best of friends in fellowship. Okay, we're out of time. I'm happy to show some more of these. This is really my favorite little sequence. But let me give you a chance to make any observations or comments. This last series or any of the commercials that I've showed. Yeah.
I think the thing seductive when looking at this in terms of the church is we can't really save people from themselves or what we think they're going to want is bad for them. I mean, really a lot of what the church does comes on the other side when people have been overwhelmed by too much of this and they start looking for something genuine. And it's a battle, but I mean, you're up against a lot, and I think we're more slopping up with the mop, I think, than we are making ads as sexy as this. I don't know, that's just,
yeah.
I don't mean to be so dour, but I think that's a big part of it.
No, I think you're right, and I mean, I didn't disclose this yesterday. I'm UCC, and the last 2 years, the UCC denomination, United Church of Christ, has spent a whole lot of money creating about 5 different commercials that they then try to, through email, get money to put on network television. Now, you know, I suspect there's been more money spent on those commercials than there has been on global missions in the last 2 years. Whether that's, I don't know, it's playing this game, which certainly works for advertisers. The other side of this, however, is we all enjoy this stuff. I mean, I'll freely admit I do. I find this stuff fascinating. My guess is some of the most brilliant storytellers and artists in our society today are working for advertising.
Yeah.
I mean, this stuff is so well done that, you know, to see it and to discuss it helps us build certain immunities to what it's trying to do to us. And that's important for Christians to do. Okay, any other observations or comments? Yes?
I just think like these commercials really show like how materialistic our society is, and like all the commercials promise something like, oh, you're going to look better, or you're going to, you know, if you drive this car, you're going to be cooler, or that type of thing. It really shows like the lack of like, values maybe in our society. We're all focused on like what we have and what we can get and what we need to get more of.
Yeah, we're focused on it. That's what most of our self-identity is built out of, the goods that we consume.
I'm trying to think what happened in my father's life the year he went from a Studebaker Commander to a Studebaker Lark. that's a total switch.
Yeah, Commander to a Lark.
The Studebaker is probably disturbing.
That's pretty good. I like that. Yeah.
I think that this reveals that the needs that the church speaks to, obviously, are hardwired in us. And they are experiential. They are not philosophical. And I think that it speaks to how our experience of worship also needs to be geared to admitting these needs that are not just about hearing the right words, but they are having the experiences that confirm for us that, yes, we are in a community that understands what these are, and these needs are given to us by the one who has made us. And there is a way that we can share that experience together in a regular way. Mm-hmm. But we're very afraid of that. You know, we broke all those icons at a certain stage because we didn't want to be manipulated. Mm-hmm. So
here's some more icons.
Yeah.
I mean, you're making an important point. Our needs are not evil. human needs are not evil. They have to be oriented in a particular way in order to avoid becoming evil. Our desire. This is one great distinction between Buddhism and Christianity. In Buddhism, desire is the root of all problems. In Christianity, we were made as desiring beings. And ultimately, we exist to desire God. But we desire all these other things en route to returning to God, and that's the source of the problem. Yeah.
I think that last segment of the Gatorade with the lightning, that is so shrewd, because Gatorade is never even mentioned. It's just the symbol, which leaves in your own mind to fill in the words, so they get you telling the story for them, yeah, without ever having to say a word. Yeah. Just by the symbol. It's just fascinating.
We all sweat through.
But it was on the cooler, I think.
Yeah, but they
heard. Yeah, it was on the cooler. Yeah. And what was the line at the very end, right?
Is it in you?
Is it in you? Yeah. Is it in you?
Is it?
But yeah, I mean, they get you to tell it for them. What makes it yours? It becomes.
You own it.
Yeah.
Every year, the funniest commercials and the companies that pay the most money for the Super Bowl are Budweiser. I think that you could have a whole hour a week on beer ads and what they do, especially targeted to young people. And I kind of like your point about, I mean, how do you compete with that? You don't want to get involved with it, but
yeah,
it's so powerful. You know, the acceptance and lust and belonging and just. They are funny too.
Yeah.
It's the ultimate Satan.
Can we close with a beer commercial?
Oh,
you're going to have to bear with me. I got to fast forward through about five other commercials, but this Eucharistic sequence ends with a beer commercial. It's just incredible.
It'd be fun to see.
You can try.
Yeah. So
long. Or Miller.
I gotta show. I'm sorry. Yeah. I gotta show this one.
Definitely. Yeah, that's a good
this
one.
Is a beer commercial, not the one I'm referring to. Boy, it's slower in fast motion than it is in.
Your game, aren't you worried about them drinking on the Bud Light?
Not to worry. Look what I had installed.
A super revolving wall. Dude, you're a genius.
Yeah, hurry up! Jurassic Park is back!
That's so good. That's so good.
I'm gonna show this one too. Again, the sacrament of the Eucharist. Nothing can happen to you.
Too much.
Experience where your creation will become a new life in Mountain Dew.
from the virtual world to the real world.
Okay, here we go.
I look back on everything. I see 100 years of moments. 100 years of our incredible history. I was there when the first keg was tapped. I've seen the growth and optimism of a young country and all the great minds that give us reason to celebrate. I've been there for the glory, and I've been there for when it hurts most. I was there the day she said yes, and all the yeses after. These are the moments that matter, the ones we savor with the champagne of beers. Because that's when you shine. And when you shine, I shine. We go hand in hand, you and I. I'm the girl on the moon, and I want to tell you everything I know. Everything there is to savor. Everything.
So there's not a drunk driving crash.
Okay, thanks everyone. Tomorrow we'll be looking at some more ads that are tapping into the theological theme of providence, divine providence, from insurance companies, financial planners, and banks.